You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 13 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the performances against Blackburn and CSKA. We'll be chatting reserve and youth team football with Mr. Mujack from the RedCafe.net forums. And we'll be joined by a Chelsea fan a little later on to preview the massive game coming up at Stamford Bridge. Stay tuned for all that and plenty more on the official RedCafe.net podcast.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 13 of the RedCafe.net podcast. I'm Stephen Darwin. I'm joined by Dov and Dan. How are we, guys?
Not too bad, yeah, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right, yeah. Dov?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you doing, Dan? I can hear you've got a sore throat. Is it a sore throat?
Yeah, I'm always ill these days. I don't know what it is. Old age.
And you start eating your vegetables.
Yeah, I don't really eat very well, stuff, but never mind. I have fish and chips.
You had fish and chips. How was Halloween for you both? Did you dress up as anything crazy?
Yes, I went out as a zombie. It wasn't really that crazy, but good effects.
Probably used to.
I can't say I did anything, I'm afraid, Dov. Just a boring night in for me, unfortunately. What about you?
I dressed up as Little John, the famous crunk artist. I had dreadlocks and a gold cup. And, yeah, it was quite fun.
Fantastic stuff. Right, well, guys, let's kick off the show by discussing the Blackburn Rovers win, shall we? 2-0 on the weekend. Dov, dominated, didn't we, from start to finish? Dominated the possession. Great to see Berbatov scoring another fantastic goal. Rooney on the score sheet as well. And I suppose just what we needed after Anfield as well.
Yeah, it was quite a run-of-the-mill win, to be honest. It's one that maybe we were sort of expecting as well. Like old Blackburn at Old Trafford should be an easy victory, and at the end of the day it was. Although I was a little bit worried when it was at 0-0. Like after the first half, I was like, oh, that was going to be one of those games possibly, but it wasn't to be. And I was speaking to Dan, and he said, "Have you seen Berbatov's goal?" And I hadn't seen it yet. And he said, "It's class." And then I watched the highlights, and it was class. Absolutely brilliant from
him. It was amazing. What the technique, I mean, it was a shot from ever, yeah, but I mean, the way he just turned on that ball, it was stunning.
And yeah, it was.
Every week I have to have this debate with you how good he is, and he's proven it now, and it's great.
No, wait a minute. He needs to do that a lot more before.
Oh, come
now.
On. He's doing it.
He's getting better.
He's certainly having a better season than last season. And the goal, it was like a carbon copy of the one he scored against. Was it Sunderland? He did that sort of back volley into the corner.
Maybe that's his one trick. He's a one-trick pony.
But, Dan, interesting question, actually. I mean, you look at the partnership now between Berbatov and Rooney. It's really looking like it's starting to come to fruition. How would you compare that to the great partnerships of the past? You know, the likes of York and Cole, Cantona and Mark Hughes. Where would Berbatov and Rooney sort of fit in comparison with those?
Well, I think it's a bit early to be drawing comparisons to York and Cole. I think them two hit it off almost straight away.
So they didn't hit it off straight away. They were amazing when they hit it. They were just so good. They're my favourite partnership ever.
It was unbelievable how they just seemed to know where each other were all the time. Little dummies, step-overs, one-twos. The movement as well was especially good between those two. But I think Rooney and Berbatov, you can see they're starting to understand each other a little bit more. Rooney tends to get out of Berbatov's way a little bit more as well, which is something that I think last season they tended to want the same ball. But I think this time, I think it's coming round. It's coming round good. And the rest of the team, in you know, response to Berbatov posing the question, you know, they all know what he can do now, and they all know where he wants it. He does throw his tantrums, but I think that partnership, it could blossom this season.
And yeah, you mentioned Rooney sort of getting out of the way of Berbatov now. I've noticed Rooney's dropping a lot more deep to pick up the ball, and Berbatov is being that focal point, sitting on the last man. which is in a way how he got his goal. He was sat on the last man, flicked it up, bang, and it's a goal. So it's good to see that it's working out well. Dov, what about the back? Obviously, Ferdinand and Vidic both ruled out. Evans and Brown come in once again, and they were comfortable.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they weren't really tested too much. Obviously, Brown sort of, like, he's sort of come back for injury as well, so it was a good game to get him in. And obviously, John Evans, like we sort of said last week, he needs to get his chance, and he got it. But there wasn't really much for them to do, to be honest. Evra, he had a good game at the back, getting forward as well. Obviously, like, kind of set up the goal. And John O'Shea was John O'Shea, you know what I mean? Just being fantastic as ever.
I thought Wes Brown's distribution was good. Every time he got the ball, he seemed to play a good pass, which is something that he's not always been blessed with throughout his career. But I think he's improved, Wes Brown. And he looked relatively sharp as well, which is good for us, seeing as, you know, Vidic and Ferdinand both having trouble with the calf. So
yeah, it was good as well seeing Evans sort of bringing the ball out of defence as well, so kind of like the way the Rio does. So it was good to see that. Sort of shows that he's getting a bit more comfortable, maybe leading it, like, or could possibly lead the line in the future. So that was good to see.
Yeah. How did you guys think about Bobatan? I thought he looked all right. Obviously, that blatant miss. I'd have put money on Steve to score that one. but I thought his performance in general was pretty good. I always wanted the ball, and I was running with it as well.
I think it might give Nani a kick up the backside that he needs. Obviously, if you've got a guy, Obertan, who's pretty much every time he's played for the reserves in the first team, he's impressed. So then maybe that will sort of spur Nani on to sort of up his game a little bit, or get that sort of finishing touch that he lacks.
To be fair, Dov, I don't think it's a case of giving Nani a kick up the backside, though. I think it's just purely that Nani isn't good enough at the moment. I don't think it's a case of him not wanting it or not being up for it, because every game you can see he's putting the effort in and he is trying to get involved and trying to pull off that bit of magic, but it's just not working at all for him. And I think you're right in pointing out that Obertan is knocking on the door now, and if Nani really doesn't start producing, I think, to be honest, I think his days are numbered at United, full stop.
I thought Nani played all right. I mean, again, his end product was abysmal, really. It's like watching Sean Wright Phillips. But I just think that I like the way that he always wants the ball. You know, he doesn't shy away from it. He's always, you know, if he makes a daft mistake, he wants it back again the next minute. Mm-hmm. But I think the rest of the players just get a bit frustrated with him. You see Rooney sometimes. He'll make a little run, won't get the ball, and then, you know, all the momentum out of the move, it just stops. But I think he's still got all that potential. It's really frustrating. And I don't think we won't get the money back for him, what we paid for him. So
when do you say enough is enough in terms of potential? When you say, look, he's had so many chances, and when can you draw a line underneath it and say, sorry, you're just not quite good enough?
He's still a young man, you know. He's not played, like, again, this is something that I said last week. He's not played enough. He doesn't get enough consistent games. So I think now that he's got a serious contender for his position, you can say, like, you've got Giggs and Park, but I don't think they're serious contenders. I think Obertan could well become a serious contender because of his age and his performances when he comes on. That could only be a good thing for Nani.
What about Anderson as well? I noticed he put in a good shift, obviously got the assist for the Rooney goal, and he looks like he's stepping it up a level now, and he's ready to step in and become the main man.
Do you know what I really liked about him? In his performance, he was sort of controlling about the play as well, sort of deciding, telling people where to go. Like, for example, the Rooney goal, where he basically told Obertan he wanted the ball and where he wanted it. And I've never seen that from him before, or maybe not as forceful as he was then. I quite enjoyed that from him.
Okay, well, before we move on to have a brief look at the CSKA Moscow game, let's just mention the one email we've received this week. That's from Oli Chakraverty. He's asked our opinion on various players that we've been linked with in the newspapers over the last week or so. Luis Suarez, who's at Ajax at the moment, he's one that he's flagged up that could potentially, well, there's been talk that he could be the replacement for Cristiano Ronaldo. Guys, I hold my hands up. I don't really know too much about him. Dov, Dan, have you seen anything of Luis Suarez?
Yeah, I've seen. I think he's a very good player. A lot of pace and trickery. But, I mean, $35 million, I'm not convinced at that price tag. I think if we could pay an extra $10 million, probably get Valencia, What am I on about? David Villa.
Why are you on about Dan?
I don't know. I just thought of the club for some reason. But yeah, David Villa, I mean, you could pay $50 million and get him. I'd rather do that than spend $35 million on someone who's not really proven at the top level, but is a decent player. Whereas we know what Villa can do.
And well, yeah, that was Ollie's second question, really. He was referring to the two Valencia lads, David Villa and David Silva. Dov, I'll move on to you now for that one. I mean, both terrific players, aren't they? But do you see either of them slotting in? I mean, both presumably have played for Valencia in the UEFA Cup this season, so I guess that rules them out of the Champions League. So would it really be worthwhile splashing out a good, what, 30, 40 million to land either of them?
I think maybe in the summer, to be honest. I know you rate David Villa, but I think David Silva is a fantastic little player. And he's one that I'd love to have him at the club, so he can play anywhere across the midfield, supporting the striker as well. And he's young, he's 22 or 23, so he's quite a young player as well. So he's got a few years to develop and sort of grow into the club and stuff as well. But then David Villa, he's a bit older for me, a bit too old maybe to be spending 35, 40 million pounds on him. And when you've got Rooney and Berbatov, he's a top striker, one of the best in the world. Where do you play him? How do you get him in the team? And you're going to have to play somebody else out of position, stuff like that. I think David Villa would cause too many problems. I think David Silva would be a much better fit for the club.
Right, lads. Well, let's look now at the game from the other night. It's CSKA Moscow. Dan, tell me, what happened? I mean, you can't say it wasn't eventful. There was plenty going on, plenty of goals. But we shouldn't really be drawing at home to CSKA Moscow, should we?
No, Steve, you're right. I mean, in the end, it did turn out to be a good game and a decent performance in battling back from 3-1 down. But some of the defending was awful. I was at the game last night. I thought the atmosphere was a bit flat throughout most of the game. And that seemed to transpire onto the pitch. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Wes Brown-Johnny Evans partnership. CSKA's forwards pulled them apart in all honesty last night. So I think that's something could be worked on. I think they both drop off too much, which allowed CSKA onto us. But I mean, you know, Van der Sar maybe at fault for at least one of the goals. But yeah, in the end, showed good determination and we battled back. So you've got to be happy with a point, really, after you're losing 3-1.
Well, you mentioned Van der Sar there, Dan. I mean, if that had been Foster for the first goal, we'd be talking now about how he's never going to make it at United, how he's made another huge error. And to be fair, Dan, I suppose he should have really made a save on that first goal.
Well, I mean, the guy who finished it, he went wide. You don't expect the ball to flash into the top corner from there. Whether his positioning was wrong or anything like that, but I know a lot of people just say, like the Torres one, I thought the Torres one a few weeks ago was possibly he could have saved it. But a lot of people said, oh, it's at that height where the keeper doesn't, you know, he's not got much chance to react. But so I don't know whether last night's was like that as well. But I fully expect a goalkeeper there to at least parry it or get a touch onto it. But in the end, it went in. He didn't mean to do it. So, you know, I'm sure we'll go over it. But like you say about Ben Foster, though, you're probably right about saying he wouldn't make it at United if that was him. And I think the third goal as well. I mean, the ball's in the 6-yard box. I think he's got to come out to that.
And Gabriel Obertan, Dan, another little cameo performance from him. And again, he looked impressive. And, well, Nani, I mean, we discussed it earlier on that he was ineffective, really, against Blackburn and pretty poor. And again, there's just no end product, is there? I know he was involved for the Michael Owen goal and a neat little back heel to put him in. But other than that, it doesn't seem to be happening for him. And with Obertan knocking on a door now, it's surely going to be only be a matter of time for him to be given the nod ahead of Nani.
I think the problem with Nani, I mean, I think he tries too hard. I think he's trying to do that something special every time he gets on the ball. And it might be a little bit better, you know, for him to just concentrate on keep doing the simple stuff, getting the fans back on your side and then going for it. Because every time he touches it, like, there's expectation on him to do something special, but at the same time, the inevitability that he's going to cock it up a bit. But Obertan, yeah, came on. Looked lively, a few step overs, looked tricky, didn't lose the ball much. So yeah, I mean, I'm all for Obertan starting, but I mean, obviously, don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. He's only played three games. So
you're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
It's reserves review time now, and we're going to be catching up with Mr. Mujak from the redcafe.net forums very shortly. But first, Dov's going to bring us details of United in action in the Lancashire Senior Cup against Liverpool, of all teams. So, Dov, take it away.
Well, Steve, it's bad news. The reserves have been knocked out of the Lancashire Senior Cup by Liverpool. It was a game at Moss Lane, so it was a game at home. It was 1-1 after 90 minutes, and then Liverpool won 4-3 on penalties to rub it in. So, just tell you a bit about the game. Well, first as well, we were the holders going into the game, and this would have been the third successive Senior Cup if we'd won it, but we didn't. So, anyway, more to the game. Basically, starting the game, Liverpool, they were looking a bit better. They started brighter, had a few early chances, stuff like that. But as the sort of first half wore on, United had, say, the better of the chances. Josh King, he particularly had a chance from a Cameron Stewart cross. And he curled his shot just over the bar from about 10 yards. Then, like after half an hour, Liverpool scored. Basically, what happened, Eccleston, Liverpool player, defender, he sort of fired in a shot from sort of the sort of left wing area, sort of pulled it back. And basically, it looked like it was going to be ruled out for offside. But the assistant's flag went up for offside, but then the referee overruled the decision and was right to overrule the decision, and Liverpool went 1-0 up. After that, United had sort of the better of the game, especially in the second half. Richard Delight had a header, and then Solskjaer brought on Tosic, Matt James and Kiko Makeda as the half wore on in the second half, and after 72 minutes, Tosic levelled to make it 1-1. And after Tosic scored, basically it was all United. We pushed on, and there was also a clear penalty that we should have had. Tosic went over from a Robbie Thurifo challenge, and it was disgusting. It should have been a penalty, but it wasn't given. It wasn't to be. And Fabian Brandy, he came close in injury time to getting a winner, as he sort of hit a low drive and it just crept just past the post. But the final whistle went, and penalties it was. I'll just tell you who scored for us. Makeda scored, Brandy scored, Tosic scored. James and Delight both missed, and all Liverpool's takers scored, and I don't even care who they are. That's us out of the Lancashire Senior Cup, which is not good at all. But I think we should go to things a bit more important and a bit more upbeat, and we'll have a little word with Mr. Mujak and see how he's doing.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, everybody, I'm delighted to welcome Tony Parkour to everybody in Red Cafe's Mr. Mujak back to the show. It's been a few weeks, Tony. How have you been doing?
I've been good, Dob. There seems to be lots of activity over the last few weeks, so it's just trying to fit everything in with the normal day job.
I know. There's lots and lots to talk about, so we won't waste any more time. Well, first I want to start with a player who's making a little bit of a reputation is Gabriel Obertan. Started a couple of games, well, it's not played in a couple of games for the first team, started a couple of games for the reserves. I mean, what have you made of his performances in the reserve side, and what about his future potential as well from those games?
Well, I think it's been very, very encouraging. What I really liked about Obertan from the beginning was he was actually in the stands watching two or three of the reserve games before he got back into the side, before he got fit again. And I always think that's a really good sign. So many players, you just never see them. And this lad was keen to, I think, get a feel for the pace of the game, get a feel for what reserve football is all about. And when he made his debut the other week, he showed some, even though he only played for half an hour or so, he made some really nice touches. He looks like he's got good close control. Clearly, he's as quick as lightning. And I think it just gives us so much more options with that sort of pace in the side. I don't have much more to add around Obertan, except he came on Saturday, obviously, against Blackburn, and he didn't look out of place. And with a little bit of luck, a little bit of more perhaps composure or experience, he could have easily had one or two goals to sort of cap his debut in fine style.
It would have been a great debut as well. But another player we mentioned last time we spoke was Josh King, and you obviously let us know that he'd just been given a squad number, and he did get on in the Carling Cup game. So, I mean, how have you been sort of rating him? He's a player that sort of came to a lot of people's attention in recent weeks as well.
And it's not just, I think, supporters' attention. As I've been watching the games of the last few weeks, it was really obvious that the defences of a couple of teams, notably Liverpool, Oldham, he was marked by two defenders on many occasions. So it's clear that his power, his strength on the ball, and his reputation has preceded him to some extent. And he's just such a cracking player. I think it was interesting, actually, Dov. I was reading an article by Alex Ferguson in Eric Harrison's book. It was the biography is called From the Dugout, and it talks about Eric Harrison's career and how he sort of put the whole youth team together at Man United, and it was fascinating. And one of the things he talked about was Ferguson's experience with his time in Scotland, St Mirren particularly, where he brought an Aberdeen, obviously, where he brought a lot of kids through, and he put them too soon into the team. And Ferguson was quoted in Harrison's book of saying, "I've learned so much from doing that I will never do that again at Manchester United." And I think we've seen evidence over the years, particularly with Giggs and one or two others, where he's held them back, pushed them forward, held them back. And I think he's handling them really well. And I think with Makeda as an example, he's given him a couple of chances in the first team, and then he doesn't necessarily drop him, but he rests him. He's Makeda's and King of their training with the first team. They're getting lots of great experience, but he's not pushing them on too hard. And I just think that's great for both King and Makeda and all the other lads' progress that they've got Ferguson in charge. He's not going to rush it. He's just got so much potential. If he can stay clear of injuries, I think he can be a really, really good first-team player for the future.
Tony, can I ask you about Magnus Ekram? Because obviously he's been playing well for the reserves. But, I mean, do you think he'll ever break through to the first team, or do you reckon it'll be one of those where he's let go?
Do you know what? I really don't know. The last 6 months, well, really the first half of this year, I think there's been a massive change in Magnus's play. I don't know if you saw the two goals against Blackburn. They were so Beckham-esque in every single respect. He scored the most unbelievable free kick. He got one the week before, which was virtually identical. And then he chipped the keeper from about 30, 35 yards. And it was pure class. It had everything about what you'd expect from a professional footballer. It had composure, it had technique, it had vision, it had everything. And now he's built himself up. He's turning into a really cracking footballer. I think what will happen is he'll go out on loan. I think he needs to go out on loan. We need to see whether or not he can cut it at the highest level available, whether that be Championship or League One. Obviously, Fergie will make that decision. Whether he can cut it with the physical side of the game. I think you saw Darren Fletcher come through, and he struggled a little bit in the early days with the physique, with the physical side of the game. And I think Magnus may well struggle as well, but certainly he's got the temperament, he's got the technique, he's got the vision, he's got the passing. It's just whether or not he gets a chance in our midfield. I mean, I'm very curious about what the rest of you guys think seeing him, and obviously looking at our midfield at the moment, it is light, in my opinion, of a couple of creative influences.
Well, you spoke about the two goals that he scored. I mean, the free kick it was against Blackburn was an absolutely magnificent free kick, and then having the vision to score from like 40 yards as well. I mean, from everything that I've seen from him, it looks like it should be knocking on the door for the first team. Especially, I think that maybe one of our weakest points is the centre midfield, and I think having him there as a bit of a creative spark and stuff as well, it would be something that's maybe well needed. I'd like to see him get a few games before the season's out, at least.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that he got a knock just before the Carling Cup against Barnsley. I actually have a sneaky suspicion that he might have got a 20-minute run or a half a game, as as Tosic did or whatever, and he could have just had that opportunity of making the step up, but obviously he's got the knock at the wrong time, so we'll have to wait and see. I certainly agree, and I hope you're right. I just like him a lot. I think he's come on heaps and bounds.
Has indeed. I want to maybe go a bit further down to a couple of particular younger player is Will Keane. He's been banging in the goals, to say the least, and he scored a recent hat-trick for the under-18s. Could you tell us and everybody else a little bit about him and his recent performances as well?
Yeah, Will's a very slight player. He's not a classic centre-forward. In actual fact, he's almost the antithesis of what Josh King is. King's the big, powerful, strong-running, direct sort of player. King's more Sheringham-like in terms of he'll drop off, he'll do the link play. He's got a good touch. He's got a very good footballing brain. He plays the simple ball. And to give you an example, the three goals he scored against City, which is the hat-trick you were mentioning, the first one was great work by Cunnicliffe, and King was just in the right place on the six-yard line to sort of knock it in. The third goal was a good team move. Again, Cunnicliffe set him up, and he was Johnny on the spot to just push the ball past the keeper. Whereas the third one, you know, it was a break into the box. It went wide from Brady. Brady knocked it in, and Keane sort of made an absolute cracking attempt on goal, knocking it past the keeper. So he's got that ability to drop off and move forward and very intelligently read the game. Again, for him to progress further, I know he's had a short run in one of the reserve games as a substitute. He needs to put on a bit of beef. He needs to stock up. But that's nothing less than you expect with a lad who's just finished school last year and it's his first season in the academy. He hasn't got the natural physique of a Makeda or a Ryan Tunnicliffe or one of the other lads, even Robbie Brady for all his diminutive size. He's not the biggest lad. He's very chunky. He's very strong, Robbie Brady. Will hasn't got that natural physique. But then many other players don't either. Ekram certainly didn't at 16, 17. So it'd be interesting to see. I think it's really exciting that we've got so many different types of forwards in the juniors at the moment. You've got the Ajozi Stewart sort of tricky wingy play. You've got the Brady direct play. Makeda's got the quick feet, the ability to see things and play off other people. King the direct. And now you've got Will Keane, who's the more subtle player, if you like. I think it's a really nice balance.
Tony, I've got a quick question about a player you'll probably know a lot about from the reserves in the past. It's Tom Cleverley. Obviously, he's at Watford at the moment, and he's doing really, really well there. I'm sure you've noticed that. He's as well. He's broken into the England under 21 setup, which is great for him as well. So, what do you make of all that? Do you see him coming back next season and perhaps playing a role, maybe in the Carling Cup, or is it a case of he's looking a great player, but it's simply that he's never going to make the grade at Old Trafford?
I don't know about that, because if you remember, he went on a pre-season tour a couple of seasons ago and he didn't look out of place at all. I think it was the South Africa tour, and he didn't look out of place at all. I think he went over as a late replacement for someone who was injured. He scored a goal and he looked really good alongside other good players, and I think that's the way to look at a player. How do they play and how do they fit in amongst a more experienced group of individuals, more professionals? And he didn't look out of place. What he has shown at both Leicester and Watford is he can cut it at championship level. And I think that's a really hard league to be successful in. Mm. Very few players go in. I thought Darren Gibson, for example, struggled at Wolves. Whereas Tom hasn't. He's a very clever player. He can play wide. He can play in the middle. He's quick. He's got great feet. He's direct as well. He can score goals. I like the look of him. I think it really depends on what the coaching's... The thing that always... to keep in mind is we don't know what's behind the scenes. So there's always someone else behind that they're thinking, well, this we're going to push this lad through, like David Jones a few years ago. We're going to push David through because we want to give someone else a chance. We can see someone 2 or 3 years down behind this group that we've got high hopes for, and so this is a stopgap until that kid progresses. And so until we really understand what Ferguson and the coaching staff have in mind, I'm not sure. Certainly the likes of people, Sam Houston, and one or two others, I don't see the future at the club. They don't seem to have pushed on in the same way. Sam had a little loan spell at Hereford a couple of seasons ago, or at the end of last season, and didn't seem to cut it in the same way. I think Tom's just a very bright footballer, and I think he'll be successful, whether it's at United. I think he's certainly got premiership quality.
And Tony as well, just to sort of finish up, could you sort of tell us a bit about the... Academy on the trip to Malta, basically what was going on there, the sort of youngsters that were involved in that.
Yeah, it was interesting, Dob, because it was something that we've never tried before. It's completely unique in the history of the Man United youth team. We brought forward one of our academy games. It should have been last Saturday that we played Wolves, but for some reason, and I'm not sure how it came about, the Malta Supporters Club has its 50th anniversary, and somehow there was an arrangement where United decided to have a training camp in the Mediterranean climate. So they brought forward the Wolves under 18 game to the week, a week in advance, because it was a free weekend. And then we had a 2-2 draw with Wolves under 18's academy. Then on the Sunday, flew straight out to Valletta in Malta, and we were in training camp for a week. So the boys were doing some charity work, they were doing some social activity, but they were having a couple of training sessions each day as well as meeting the local people and stuff. And then on Thursday night they played the Hibernians of Malta youth team. Now, I don't know if Hibernians rings a bell for you. But we actually, Man United, the first team, actually played Hibernians in the first round of the European Cup in 1968. And we drew 0-0 over there and beat them 4-0 at home. So there's a history between the two clubs. And I'm happy to say that after a week training in the sunny climes of Malta, the team, which was a mixture of first years and second years, in other words, there was obviously the under-18 side, but there was half a dozen under-16s who went out with the team as well, names that perhaps you don't know so well. And we won 3-1. It was sort of a usual under-18 side for the first half. And then Paul McGuinness made 8 substitutions at half-time. And we ran out winners 3-1 with goals from Tunnicliffe and a young Tom Lawrence scored our third goal late on in the game. So it was a good performance all around from what I understand. Great experience for the lads. And something that I'd be very curious to see if they plan to do more of in the future.
Good stuff. It's good to see there. So some of the young lads getting a nice little trip as well. I'm sure that was good for them. But Tony, sadly to say, we've run out of time. We just don't have any time to talk to you as much as we want to talk to you for a bit longer. But I'm sure we'll have you on a bit more than what we did from the last time, because it's too long. We need this insight to some of the young players and see what's going on in the youth teams and the academy and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll speak to you in the next couple of weeks.
Happy to do so, Dom.
Thanks very much, then. We'll speak to you then. Thanks again, Tony.
Take care, guys.
Cheers, Tony.
Bye now.
Well, it's Legends Profile now, and we'll bring back Dov. Dov, who have you got lined up for us this week?
Well, Steve, I'm going all the way back to the turn of the century. Not the millennium, all the way back to the 1900s to a player by the name of William Henry Meredith, or to you and me, Billy Meredith. And he was apparently the game's first superstar, so I'll tell you a bit about him and you can judge for yourself. He was born on the 30th of July 1874 in Black Park in Chirk in Wales. He was an outside forward, and for our younger listeners, an outside forward was basically a winger. So in the formations at the time, they had 5 up front, so it was like a 2-3-5 formation, and he was on the far right-hand side of the front 5. Players that you can maybe think of, like Stanley Matthews, Tom Finney, they were the kind of players that are comparable in style to him. He started off his playing career at his hometown club, Chirk, and he was working in the Black Park Colliery from the age of 12 and was working there when he was playing for his local club. So he played there for a couple of years, and obviously he was working in the pits when he was doing this. And in 1883, there was a bit of unrest with the miners and stuff like that. So Billy Meredith, he needed some more money, and a football league team, Northwich Victoria, they offered him a small fee to play some games for them. So he played 11 games for them, and his performances for Northwich Victoria caught the eye of several bigger teams, Bolton Wanderers and Manchester City were the two ones that were most interested in him. He did sign for Manchester City in 1894, and he only signed as an amateur, and he continued to work in the pits for a year, commuting back and forth to Manchester for matches. And eventually, Manchester City insisted that he sign as a professional, and in 1895 he did so. And his first full season for City, he actually finished top scorer while playing on the wing. So, what a player there. But scandal was to ensue. City were going for the league title in 1906-07, City were going for the league title in 1905-1906, and Billy Meredith was embroiled in a bribery scandal. Basically, City were playing Aston Villa, who they were vying for the title with, and well, apparently, he's always denied this, that he offered Aston Villa defender Alec Leek £10 to throw the game. So £10 could buy you a match back then. It's not expensive. After the game, there was a bit of violence between Leek and a City player called Turnbull, and basically after the game, Leek just came out and said he was offered this money by Billy Meredith. It was then investigated by the Football Association, found guilty and suspended from playing football for a year. During this time, obviously it was a bit tougher for footballers than it is nowadays, City refused to provide financial help for Meredith, so they were scumbags back then. And he basically decided to go public with what was going on at behind the scenes at the club, and this is a direct quote from the great man. He said, "What was the secret of the success of the Manchester City team? In my opinion, the fact that the club put aside the rule that no player should receive more than £4 a week. The team delivered the goods, the club paid for the goods, and both sides were satisfied." So basically, due to this quote, the Football Association investigated Manchester City, and it was seen that they were paying players more than what they should have been playing. So, basically what happened is Manchester City were forced to sell a lot of the players at an auction at the Queen's Hotel in Manchester. And Manchester United manager at the time, Ernest Mangnall, he signed Billy Meredith for £500 at the auction, which apparently at the time was a bit of a steal. So at Manchester City, he played 338 games for them between 1894 and 1906, scored 145 goals, and then moved across town to a much sunnier part of town. Made his debut in a 1-0 victory over Aston Villa and was a firm favourite with the fans from the start. Basically, his time at Manchester City, this is the time that made him the first sort of footballing superstar. He's been compared to likes of, more recently, Ryan Giggs, obviously being Welsh, George Best, players like that, but apparently had the attitude of an Eric Cantona, which you might find out a bit later could be true. And it was at this time the Manchester United were becoming a major force in the game, and the attacking nature of the club, which we still see today, this is when it was sort of traced back to, and the brand of football that they played that became the hallmark of the club. So it's basically thanks to Billy Meredith, and he was sort of instrumental in United winning their first major trophies. He won two league championship medals in 1908 and 1911, and an FA Cup winner's medal in 1909. Basically, from all the reports I've read, obviously there's no footage of him that I can find. It was just basically, it was his winding runs, pinpoint crosses, sort of made him the player he was. And when he used to make these runs and crosses, he would go all the way to sort of the goal line, as far to the byline as he could, and then cross the ball in, so that the attacking players who would score weren't offside when he'd done so. So he was thinking a little bit as well. Obviously, the First World War happened, no football was played, and then after the war, he sort of came back and he wasn't the same kind of player. This happened to a lot of players during the time. He eventually moved back to Manchester City in 1921, played 28 games, basically because he felt with the management at Old Trafford and wasn't the same player, so he went back to City, where his sort of career sort of took off. Obviously, being Welsh, he played 48 times for the national team, scored 11 goals, and was a first-team regular until the age of about 45. So that sort of shows you the kind of talent that he had. Talking about him as a man, he was a controversial figure. Failed with managers, threatened to walk out of teams, and was also demanding higher wages quite a lot of the time. And in 1907, he was among one of the founding players of the Players' Union, which is now the PFA. So he was quite a leader. And one other thing I found out is that he was firmly against women watching football. He basically said that the things that they'll hear on the sidelines are things that women shouldn't hear and they shouldn't be put through. So he didn't really like women coming to watch him play football. Going back to, though, sort of bringing it back to a bit more recent, the strip that we're wearing this season has a V on it. And it was this V that he designed in 1909 when we won the FA Cup. We won the FA Cup final 1-0, and he was man of the match in that game. He was also a little bit of a trademark as well. He played with a toothpick that he chewed while he was playing. He believed it assisted his concentration. The reason he used a toothpick is because he used to chew tobacco during the game, but the cleaners who washed the strips refused to wash them because he used to spit on the strips with the tobacco, so he changed to a toothpick. After he was at Manchester City, he was a player coach with them for a little bit. Then he came back to Manchester United in 1931 and coached, and was sort of quite close to both clubs for the rest of his days. He went on to play in the North American Soccer League as well, and sort of done some sadly though, he died in Manchester in 1958 at the age of 83, so it was the same year as the Munich Air disaster. And a little bit of a sort of I nice thing that sort of Manchester United, Manchester City, the Welsh FA and the PFA done was that it had an unmarked grave for years and years and years. And basically they got this grave, and basically City, United, the Welsh FA and the PFA basically put a new headstone in, and they basically covered the costs and upkeep of this sort of new headstone, just basically because it was such a great player. And in 2007 he was announced as an inductee to the English Football Hall of Fame. But I want to finish by a quote from the great man. On his retirement, he said, "Football was my only love, for it is a noble and manly game." So there you go. That is Billy Meredith, a legend of the club from a long time ago.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
I'm delighted to say we're being joined on the line by Duncan Robinson now. Duncan's a Chelsea fan. He's actually living in Manchester as well. So welcome to the show, Duncan. Chelsea, you're flying at the moment, Duncan. 4 emphatic wins as well. So you must be confident going into the game on Sunday.
Very confident, yeah. We're looking good at the moment. Probably best I've seen us play since the Mourinho days. So, yeah, loving it at the moment. Ancelotti seems to have found a system for us. So we're looking good, yeah.
And is that the main reason for why it's going so well? Is it the Ancelotti factor?
Well, he's introduced this new system, and obviously in certain games it hasn't worked, but most of the time it seems to be looking good. And Elka and Drogba were linking up well up front, so all in all, it seems to be going pretty well for us.
And just with Sunday in mind, Dunk, is that do you think it's season-defining for either side? Do you think if United lose that, Chelsea lose that, then, well, they could crumble and that could be it for the Premier League title?
I think obviously it's a very important game for two best teams in the league, undoubtedly. But I mean, to say, you know, whoever wins it is going to win the title is a bit premature this early in the season. But I think obviously it's going to be massive, especially with the Chelsea 2 points ahead at the top. If we were to win and go 5 points clear, that'd obviously open up a bit of a gap there. So obviously that'd be important. But I mean, it's not going to decide who wins the title.
And Dunk, just looking at the United team, who do you think is going to cause you the most problems on Sunday?
Well, if Rooney's fit, then obviously he's going to be the man to watch, although we do seem to keep him quiet whenever he comes up against us, so we're not too worried by him.
And which player in particular from the Chelsea team would you say United should really, really be worried about? Is it Drogba?
Always Drogba. Always in the big games, he's always there. He'll always step up. And he's done it on more than one occasion in the past, won the big games for us, so I can see him doing it again on Sunday. Ferdinand and Vidic playing as they were.
I was just going to say, what about Joe Cole? Because he came into the team last weekend and by all accounts was absolutely fantastic. Do you think he'll start against us at the weekend?
Well, Joe Cole's a cracking player, but he's not 100% much fit at the moment. Deco's actually surprisingly had a couple of really good games recently, so I think he'll probably get the nod on Sunday. But obviously Joe Cole's a great option to have off the bench. But as I say, I think Deco will probably get the start.
I'd rather play against Deco than Joe Cole. I think Joe Cole's his quality, really. England have missed him as well. But I think Deco.
Yeah, personally, I think Joe Cole's, you know, he's one of the best players in Europe. And Deco, I'm not really a fan of, but he is in form at the moment. He had a great game at Bolton on Saturday. He's had a couple of really good games for us this season. He seems to be another one who's working well in the new formation at the tip of the diamond. So it'd be interesting to see who he plays. But obviously, I'd like to see Joe Cole, but I wouldn't be surprised if Deco gets a start.
And Dunk, I know you probably wouldn't pick any, but if you had to, if there was one player from the United team that you could slot into that Chelsea side, who would it be?
Oh, Wayne Rooney, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt. He'd make him the best team in the world by an absolute mile. He and Drogba up front, there'd be some partnership.
Fantastic stuff. Well, Dunk, before you go, come on then, what would be your prediction for the weekend's game?
There's never too many goals in it, is there, when those two collide, so I would have thought, I'm going to say 2-1 Chelsea.
Nah. I think United will get a draw.
I don't think United will win. I think the best United score is a draw, to be honest with you. But I think we'll just nick it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Dunk.
That's all right, mate.
Well, that was Duncan Robinson, Chelsea fan, obviously full of confidence looking at the game. And guys, let's preview it ourselves now. It's going to be a hugely tough game, isn't it? They're in fantastic form. Dan alluded to it that a draw would be a good result. Dov, would you go along with that as well?
I would, yes. I think in midfield they're a little bit stronger than us, and they've got sort of bigger I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good word to say, like a bigger, burlier players, stronger players than us in the sort of middle of the park. So hopefully Darren Fletcher will be there and do some running around and hassling of the midfielders. But I think it'll definitely be a tough task for us.
And Dan, Duncan said it there. Wayne Rooney, he could be a match winner for us, couldn't he? If Rooney's on form, Berbatov's on form, then there's no reason why we can't cause them problems.
Do you think we'll go for them? Or do you think we'll like try and contain them a little bit? Because obviously the Chelsea are in really good form, but Ferguson sometimes does go 4-5-1, doesn't he?
I know what you're saying, but surely he's got to go 4-4-2.
I'd go 4-4-2, but I mean, I don't know. It depends whether he wants the point or whether he wants to go and win it and risk losing.
See, do you think, remember a couple of seasons ago where he played the five and you had Park and it was Hargreaves, I think, sort of basically shadowing the Chelsea fullbacks. Do you think he'll go something like that like on Sunday, obviously, because the way that Chelsea play is quite narrow and they do rely on their fullbacks for width? Do you think he'll sort of see that and try and combat it with a player like Park or to basically follow the fullback and not give them that attacking edge?
I'm not sure Valencia will play because, well, he's quite good defensively with Valencia, but I think we'll go with a bit more, you know, someone who's a bit more secure. And like you say, if Park is fit, then, you know, I'm sure he'll play. I'm sure about his availability at the moment, but hopefully Fletcher will play because he always plays well in big games. He steps up, doesn't he? But I think we've got enough quality there, but it just depends how courageous we are. I mean, we went 4-4-2 against Liverpool and looked all right. Weren't the best performance, but you know, we didn't look like a team that was struggling at all times. But I think Chelsea are a different opposition to Liverpool, and I think they're if they're on top of their game, they'll kill us at the moment because we're not playing particularly well.
Well, Dan, you just mentioned there that you think Valencia will be dropped. Does that mean you see Nani starting there?
I don't know. I mean, because Nani has got that ability just to do something special. You know, if when he cuts inside and he has a shot, you know. Sometimes it goes in, most of the time it doesn't. I never see Valencia really trying the same sort of moves. And maybe that's something we need against Chelsea, you know, someone who can just hit one from 25 yards, you know, and it might go in.
Do you have, like, Nani there as sort of an air of unpredictability, sort of? So Chelsea won't really know what he's going to do because he doesn't even know what he's going to do.
Yeah, possibly. I think Dan's right. I can't see Nani and Valencia playing. I think it'd be one of them two. Personally, I see it being Valencia on the right with possibly Giggs on the left. And then, Carrick and Fletcher maybe in the middle?
Do you think you'll play three in the middle? Maybe like Carrick, Anderson and Fletcher or Carrick, Scholes and Fletcher or something like that?
Well, as I mentioned, I think it'll be 4-4-2, to be honest, with Berbatov, Rooney, Giggs and Valencia on either flank. And then I see it being Carrick and Fletcher. Now I've predicted that, it's going to be completely wrong.
He's got to play a 3-5-1 or something.
Yeah, but nah, I think definitely need Fletcher in there, as we've mentioned, for that bite to get in there and harass the Chelsea midfield. Don't give them any time on the ball. Personally, I play Anderson, but I don't think he will. I don't think he'll play Anderson and Fletcher, but we shall see. And if you had to give a prediction, guys, Duncan mentioned that he sees Chelsea just nicking it. I'm sure we won't agree with that.
Well, I think it's going to be a draw. 1-1 or 2-2, something like that. I think there'll be a couple of goals, but I think it'll be a really tight game. A bit nervy as well.
Dan, you mentioned it being a draw. Is that going to be a high-scoring draw?
No, I think it'll be a safe 1-1.
What about you, Steve? Go and put your neck on the line.
yeah, I'm going to go for a draw as well. I mean, you look at their most recent results. They've scored 4 or 5 every game. It's just worrying about how we're going to contain that with Ferdinand and Vidic not in the greatest of form at the moment. So if we can go there and get a point, I'll be absolutely delighted. So a win would just be unbelievable. But maybe we're being a bit pessimistic. Maybe we're going to go there and put on a really good showing and take all 3 points. But yeah, I've got to be honest, I'll take a draw and I'll say it's going to be 2-2.
I quite agreed. That's not happened very often. It could well be our first as well.
Well, I certainly hope that we do go there and get the 3 points, but that's just about it for episode 13 of the redcafe.net podcast. Do make sure you send all your feedback, comments and any questions you've got to podcast@redcafe.net. Make sure you join Dov as well on the Facebook group, because I'm sure he's dying to get involved in some debates on there. That just leaves us to say thanks a lot for listening and see you again next week.